magical place we could go. So close your eyes and make a wish for the skies with the angriest, flappiest birds, and the seas with ridiculous fish. The Dutch Arcade Show is here again. It's Friday night and I'm with my friends Eli, Jerry, and Mike most of the time. Come on, let's go to the Dutch Arcade Show.
Hey guys, what's up? You're listening to the Touch Arcade Show's episode number 348, recording on March 30th, 2018. If this is the first time you've listened to the podcast, I'm Eli, with me is Jared. Between the two of us, we've got nearly 20 years of experience covering mobile games. If you're a podcast regular, I'm sorry we haven't been around the last few episodes. Carter's done a really good job of putting stuff together, though, so hopefully... Hopefully you're happy with that. I was super stoked by the episodes you put together. So hopefully business as usual moving forward, at least in some random aspect. I have to go to a studio tour next week, so the podcast might be interesting again next week. So I don't know. We'll see. I'm tired of traveling. I just want to stay at home and unplug my internet connection and turn off my phone. Anyway, so TouchArcade.com is the best place to go for all your mobile gaming news and also Switch stuff. We're dabbling in daily. Carter right now is publishing daily Switch Arcade roundup kind of things, which are really good, covering sales and new games and all sorts of fun stuff like that. We stream on Twitch at twitch.tv/TouchArcade, and we've got a really rocking Discord at discord.gg/TouchArcade, which is closing in on 8,000 members, so it's pretty much the best place to go to talk about mobile games or find people to play mobile games with or whatever else, particularly as Fortnite and PUBG Mobile have become a thing. The servers really exploded. And Touch Arcade is primarily community supported. So if you like this podcast or the website as a whole, we'd really appreciate if you check out patreon.com/TouchArcade. Alternatively, if you're not into the subscription thing, totally understandable. We'd love it if you do your Amazon shopping through toucharcade.com/Amazon. That link on that site should intelligently redirect to any Amazon region and appropriately tag us for the affiliate link. So we get credit for anything you buy, which really isn't a ton, but it adds up if a bunch of people start using it, which I don't know if we really hit that threshold yet. Anyway, Patreon backers get a video version of this podcast, which this week is not that fantastic because I formatted my PC and lost a bunch of my stuff. And we always appreciate iTunes reviews. And if you want to email us for any reason, it's podcast@toucharcade.com. With that out of the way, oh man, we should. So where do we start? The last, I feel like we haven't had the normal podcast for 2 weeks, if not closer to three.
I think it was two, and I think the last one we did do was like early or something weird.
Yeah. So the GDC windup for us this year involved Train Jam. So if you've never heard of Train Jam before, you should go to trainjam.com. Alternatively, if you have a HBO account, you can, or HBO Now or HBO Go or whatever iteration of the online HBO stuff you have, you can look up the March 28th episode of Vice on HBO. I'm pretty sure it's the 28th. It might be the 27th, but I think it's the 28th. But like the last 6 minutes or so of that episode is on Train Jam. And that's that Vice news crew that was on there. That was
Those guys were there the whole time, and they only ended up with 6 minutes?
Yeah. So I actually was kind of talking to Adriel about that, because I was like, I didn't really, like, she didn't know what to expect. You know, like, they asked, I guess, you know, hey, can we cover this? And she was like, yeah, sure, great. Yeah. It's a back thing. Before we get sidetracked with that, if you want to know what it is, like, a really good way to get a gist of it, and you have HBO, just, like, fast forward to the last 5 or 6 minutes of the 28th episode and watch that on Vice. It'll give you a really good idea what we're talking about. Otherwise, so the basic idea of Train Jam is it is a game jam on rails, I guess is the best way to put it, right? So a game jam, if you're unfamiliar, is an event where developers get together. Sometimes they just do stuff individually. Other times they form teams. Seems like most of the time people form teams. And then you build a game based on a certain theme. Train Jam this year was the word Odyssey was the theme. Mm-hmm. And then you have until the game jam is over to create what effectively amounts to like a functional prototype. I mean, you don't have enough time to really like put any polish on anything or anything like that, right? So
yeah.
Basically throwing together a functional prototype. Like a lot of the game jams that I've seen at stuff are like all-nighters basically, or yeah. like a weekend long thing or other stuff like that. But as the game jam thing has grown into something that a lot of developers really like people have come up with all different kinds of creative ways to do game jams. Like really, you don't even need to do an organized one. Like I've heard a lot of people, yeah. You know, that want like a lot. So a lot of times like people would do a game jam to learn how to use like a new tool that they haven't used before, or like a different, mm-hmm. You know, like big type of game or just mm-hmm. whatever else. So a lot of times you'll see people talking about, oh, I'm doing a game jam, like a plane jam, where like I'm mm-hmm. flying to San Francisco and like the entire time I'm in the air, I'm going to try to throw together like a, you know, some weird little prototype using this new thing in Unity I've never worked in before, mm-hmm. You know, in the 5 hours I'm going to be on this plane or something like that. So with Train Jam, it's the duration of the trip on the train, the California Zephyr from Chicago to Emeryville, California, which is... kind of a suburb of San Francisco, right? Is suburb the right way to put
just,
it?
Or
is it
just across the bay?
Yeah, just across the bay. So I did it last year. I loved it. And this year I was like, dude, Jared, like, we got to go to this. Like, you're going to like it so much. And there was a lot of apprehension. Jared was like, I don't know. It sounds like a huge pain in the ass. Like, I don't want to fly out to Chicago. It's on a train.
It was a huge pain. Blah, blah, blah.
And I was like, dude, no, it'll be worth it. Don't worry about it.
It was worth it. It was fun.
So yeah, Jared flew in on Wednesday afternoon,
right,
in Chicago. We gave him a whirlwind tour of Chicago eating.
Yeah.
Which consisted of a stop at Portillo's to get a Chicago style hot dog and Italian beef. Which would you think of those?
Would you fan of both?
Tell so to people. I feel like it's always difficult for me to explain what these things are to people that aren't mm-hmm. from Chicago, because it's like mm-hmm. this is crap that I've just been eating my entire life, you know. So like, how would you, how would you describe those things to people that are in Europe maybe and like don't even like a Chicago style hot dog and Italian beef is meaningless to them?
I don't know. I mean, the hot dog, it's really just about the toppings that you put on it. So it's whatever, it's like banana peppers and jalapenos and relish and, or no, is there jalapeno? Tomatoes is on there.
What, on a hot dog?
Chicago dog. It's a very specific set of toppings.
A Chicago dog, I tell you the construction, you start with a poppy seed bun, you have Vienna beef hot dog, that's an important part.
Okay.
Then on that you have like neon green relish.
Yeah.
Onions, tomatoes, celery salt, a giant pickle spear, two sport peppers, and sometimes you get a celery slice, but that's not always. Or I'm sorry, a cucumber slice, rather.
Oh, okay.
That's what's
Well, whatever the case, it's a fantastic mix. I can see why it's such an iconic hot dog style.
Yeah.
But yeah, hot dog, Chicago dog, super good. Italian beef is very similar to what I'd call a French dip, which is really just some bread. This version is just bread and meat and au jus, and that's it. And Eli's style of getting it is where they just dip the whole thing in the jus. And so you get just a soaked log of meat and wet bread, which is not as gross as it sounds. It's delicious, actually. I didn't go full dip. I did the pour over extra sauce style, and looking back, I probably should have went for the extra dip, the whole dip thing. Cause I like me some sauce, but yeah, Italian beef was very good. And then that night we got some deep dish Chicago pizza.
Oh yeah. From Lou Malnati's, there's a rivalry in Chicago as to like what even really mm-hmm. pertains to like real Chicago pizza, like anything. Right. So Lou Malnati's is like the most sanitized chain version
mm-hmm.
right now anyway, which I feel like it's fine. It's like the gold standard in my opinion.
So
what'd you think of that?
It was very good. We got a side order of a pizza that's an off menu specialty
secret
order, where instead of making crust out of dough, they make crust out of ground up sausage,
yeah,
and then put toppings on top of that in the pan and cook it all together. And that was pretty incredible.
That's my favorite.
It's so good.
It's like the most calorie dense thing you could possibly imagine. It's like, imagine like just a disc of sausage. And then like Chicago style pizza, like they don't skimp on cheese either. So it's like a ton of cheese and then some tomatoes on top just for fun.
Well, it's weird because I got the same effect as the first time I ever had a hamburger without a bun. I remember like the low carb craze, that was like a popular thing. You could even get it at fast food places and stuff. But they'd wrap your burger in like a lettuce, a sheet of lettuce or whatever. And I always thought like, that's dumb. I love buns. And then my friend had a barbecue and didn't have any buns and was like, well, we can just do this. And I was like, okay. And it was sort of like a revelation where it's like, oh man, the bun really takes away a lot from this burger. Like you don't taste the meat as much. You don't taste the toppings as much. It's kind of like filling. And it was sort of just like, wow, I never realized what I was missing out on. And so that's sort of how I felt about the sausage crust too, is like the regular dough bread crust stuff is great, but it's also super filling and I think takes away from the taste of the actual toppings. Whereas when it's just straight up sausage, there's nothing to get away in the way of you and your meat and cheese.
Yeah, no, it's a
good thing.
It's a real good thing. Yeah. And I always like, that's my go-to at Lou Malnati's, and people are always like, they don't even like, that's not even a thing. You're making that up. And sure enough, like you just got to ask for it and everyone knows what it is and all this stuff. So,
yeah,
but yeah. So then we got up, nice and early actually, talked like, so the original plan was we were going to get up super early on Thursday and take the train down into Chicago, to go to Union Station where Train Jam was departing from. That's where the Amtrak station is. Mm-hmm. But we were lucky enough to be able to talk my girlfriend into like taking kind of like a half day and driving us down there, which allowed us to sleep in way later because we didn't need to take like the stupid express train at like 8 a.m. or whatever.
Yeah.
So that was cool. So we got there at like what I feel like was the perfect time to get there, because like, so with Train Jam, how they work it logistically is that like a lot of people fly in from like all over the place because like, you know, not many people live in Chicago that are going to GDC that would be interested in Train Jam, right? So you fly into O'Hare on like Tuesday, or most people fly in Wednesday, unless, you know, you're flying in from somewhere where like if your flight gets delayed, like you get pushed back a day, because if you miss the train, you miss the train, you know, like you gotta be there. So the event is sort of structured in a way where it's like, all right, well, people start coming in and then just like hang.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I have a house. Like, I don't, like, we don't need to hang.
Like, well, I'm pretty sure they opened up, there was like a special room reserved for all the Train Jam people where you could hang out and there was like food and coffee and stuff. And I'm pretty sure you could start showing up as early as 8.
Yeah.
And the train didn't leave until 2.
Right.
So that's a long day of just sitting around doing nothing if you happen to get there super early or whatever. Well, although it's nice to like meet other people and things like that too.
Yeah.
But for our purposes, we showed up at like 11. And that was right when they started announcing, you know, the rules and then unveiled what the theme for the jam would be and all that good stuff. So I agree. It was perfect timing, even though we did have to sit around for a few hours until the train actually left.
Well, so the reason I wanted to do that was last year. I don't know if I was just being overly cautious or read the email wrong or whatever else, but it was like, it sounded like it started at 8 a.m.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, shit, well, I don't want to miss anything. So I got there at like 7:45.
Yeah.
And remember being like the absolute first person there. Like I even beat like Adriel and Rami there.
So and they're
just sitting there, and like they showed up and chatted with them for a while. And then like, you know, 45 minutes later, like another person rolls in and I'm just like sitting there with like nothing to do.
Yeah.
No one really to watch my stuff. So I just like stayed there. You know, with like
this is pre-Switch too, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah, because the Switch came out like the Friday of GDC last year, so it was pre-Switch.
Bummer.
Yeah, so that was the priority this year, was to not spend all day just sitting. Because like the room that like I don't know, like holding room or whatever you want to call it, like it's just a big conference room. Like there's nothing in it. So it's like you're just sitting on the floor or like, you know, against one of the pillars in the middle of the room or something like that. So it's not super, super comfortable or whatever. But anyway, so around like 12:30 or so, they started like corralling people up to board the train. We were in the sleeper car that was closest to the front of the train, so we actually boarded last. So even though we got there at 11 and they started boarding around like noon, we didn't actually, I feel like we didn't get on the train till like 1:30 ish.
It was real close to leaving time,
closer to 2. So there was like still, like, even though we were trying to minimize sitting around time, like there was still like a ton of sitting around time. And the worst part was like we, the only food that you didn't even get food, we just got coffee. I got a sandwich at Dunkin', but like I was like, oh dude, we can get food as soon as we get on the train, like there's a snack car, like it'll be fine, like thinking like, all right, they're gonna start boarding at 12 and we'll be on the train and like moving real quick after that. So I was like, I don't know, Jared, like I don't think we should get food because like I think they're gonna board really quick. So we didn't get food or anything, we're just like sitting there, and like we kept hitting these points where it was like, man, if we would have gone, we were talking about it, we'd be back.
We could have had a full sit-down meal, like, the whole thing.
And it was just, I feel like there was at least three or four times where we were like, you know, if we would have left now, or if we would have left when we were talking about this last time, like, it would have been fine. And then, you know, finally we got on the train and
everything else. I found a weird Danish to eat, and that was cool.
Yeah, I should have had one of those. I was in kind of a bad shape by the time we made it to the snack car and got our weird sandwiches.
I think as we're pointing out that so Train Jam is one entire train, and it's roughly 350 people total, and they even put together like a special setup of train cars on our particular line just for the jam, which you wouldn't normally see on like a regular, you know, traveling train or whatever. And it is shocking how well organized getting everyone onto the train and stuff was.
Oh, yeah.
That's, I mean, crazy. 350 people with all those different train cars, and people are in different areas, and it's just like, wow, they have it down to a science. So.
Yeah, I was totally, I don't remember how it was the year before, but this year I was like, damn, this is like, I would assume it was to be like herding cats, but somehow they've got it totally worked out. I think the only issue with boarding was there was like, I think there was like a mix up with like a person took someone else's ticket or something like that.
Yeah, something like weird, but
they thought one person wasn't on the train, but it turned out like another person. I don't remember what the resolution was, but everything was fine. Other than that, then we were like on our way. So Jared and I had a little cool little sleeper, which, man, I'm so happy we were able to score that because sleeping in coach. Although, like, so the coach seats on a train are, I would say, pretty close to what you would think of like first class seats on like a domestic airplane.
At least in terms of space and stuff, because you have like crazy leg room, room for bags and stuff in front of you. The seats themselves are fairly large and seem comfy.
Yeah.
And so it's not like you're in the coach class of like a Southwest flight.
No, not at all. I would say you almost probably have like, if you imagine like the legroom you see on like first class, like the first class area of flight, I would say you have like double or triple that even.
Yeah, it's huge.
The amount of space you have is really, so it's like not the worst thing to have a coach seat, but like, I don't know, I get super tilted if I can't take a shower every day, and like I've never been able to sleep very well unless I'm like laying down. So just leading up into GDC, knowing like the hell week that we have, I was just like, dude, if we can't get a sleeper, like we're just not going to do this because it's just going to be too much. So
I don't know if I could do it without a sleeper. I mean, it would suck.
I don't know. I think it would. I don't think it would suck as much as it would just be not as nice.
Well, the cool thing about our sleeper too is like, so there's regular roomettes and then there's deluxe rooms. And the deluxe rooms are like, you know, two beds, like the one on the floor and the one that folds out from the top of the wall or whatever. And then they have their own little sink and then like a toilet shower combo. And like a separate like sitting chair all in their little room. Our roomettes were just basically the size of the two beds and that's it. And then you'd fold the top bed up against the wall, and then the bottom bed actually splits into two normal seats that face each other, and then you have your own window. And so I actually liked that a lot. It was cool. It's like we had our own little area. We could shut the door if we wanted it to be quiet or whatever, and we had our own window, which was huge because 99% of the fun of riding a train is looking out the window. So our little room area, the space was tight, but I think it worked out really well.
Yeah, no, it was kind of amazing how it reminded me a lot of like being on like an RV or a boat or something where you're like, man, there's no space here. And then like the conductor dude comes by and is like, no, here, like hang this here. check out this closet here. Yeah. Like, use this little nook here, and it's like all of a sudden it's like, whoa, we have tons of room. This is surprising.
It was like an IKEA showroom where they're like, here's your apartment in, you know, 30 square feet.
Yeah. Yeah, so I don't know, like both this year and last year, when you walk past like the whatever the better sleeper rooms are, like the deluxe room or whatever, I'm always like, oh man, they got so much more room. But like, I almost think like having like the toilet and stuff in your room would not be super ideal, because like, man, I feel like if you like lit that up, it would just be like, all right, we'll vacate the room. We gotta come back in like 15 minutes and all this stuff. I don't know. The shower situation on the train is interesting, but not terrible.
It was fine.
One thing that I didn't notice until someone pointed out is that when you take a shower on a train, like the drain just like drains out onto the tracks.
Yeah.
It's not like
straight through the floor.
Yeah. Like, I don't know why I didn't notice that before, but like when you look down and the train's moving, you just see like through the little holes of the shower drain, you just see the tracks going by.
I did not know that was a thing, but yeah.
Yeah, so that's pretty weird. Water pressure is surprisingly good on a train shower and
plenty of hot water
and all that stuff. It's just kind of. So the first day I took a shower, the train was quite bumpy, and that was an interesting challenge. But the second day, we were like stopped for an extended period of time. I was like, oh fuck this! Like, I'm gonna go take a shower right now, because I'll be able to do it really quick without like the almost constantly falling over. All wet, naked, and soapy. So yeah, I don't know, like really cool. And like with the roomette that we had, that also gave us full access to the dining car, which includes three meals a day, which was, you know,
that is a really good value.
Yeah, surprisingly so. Well, I mean, yeah, it's, I guess when you look at the price of the food on the train, like for what we got,
for what you're getting,
it was a very good value. But if I was staying in coach, like, I don't think, and we kind of saw this, because like the first dinner service was slammed.
Yeah.
It's like everyone had to get in on dinner. And I feel like what happened was most people were like, oh, hell yeah, I wanted to do dinner. And then you sit down and you're like, I don't know if I want this like $30, you know,
train steak
or whatever. So it, like most of the people, it seemed like most of the coach people like didn't come back, but it was all included with our sleeper ticket. So like,
so we made sure to eat our meal.
Oh yeah, dude, like every time a meal came around, it was like, oh yeah, I want this burger, add extra bacon.
Yeah.
I want the surf and turf, give me the stupid little crab cake.
The alternative to that is that you're bringing your own meals for 3 days basically.
Yeah.
Which wouldn't seem awesome. And so I don't know what else you do, or just eat like trail mix the whole time or something.
Well, yeah, so the snack car had food that was about what you'd expect out of like a gas station kind of cooler, I would say.
Microwave pizzas and stuff.
Yeah, microwave stuff, which I don't know. A lot of people brought just like junk food and stuff, which I mean, you know, I've certainly eaten weirder shit. But yeah, that was all really cool. So it's always kind of interesting when you sit down at the diner car, they fill all the seats of your table. So like, even though it's just Jared and I, like they place you with two other people. So that was kind of neat, because you got to kind of like hang out and chat with some of the just other people that you probably wouldn't have otherwise talked to on the train. Like we I think the most memorable person that we ate dinner with was that Norwegian girl that was there helping out her handicapped friend that was there on the scholarship thing. Because she was really cool. She was into live game design, so like live action role play stuff. And it was just, that's just kind of stuff that like happens all the time in train jams. You get talking to someone and it's like, whoa, like your whole life is doing something that I know absolutely nothing about, and everything you're saying is very fascinating to me.
That's true.
Yeah, because like her thing was, she was didn't she say she like was doing like historical reenactments for like kids to learn how it felt to be on like the other side of like the losing side of history, right? Like there was something to do with that.
Lines,
like
yes.
You had to, like, she was doing like this role playing thing where like you were like a Nazi supporter or something like that.
Yeah.
Right? Was that it? And she was like, it sounds really weird, but, you know, like, it really gets people into the head of, like, what it would have been like to be on these, like, other sides that, like, you really never think too much about or hear too much about and stuff like that. Yeah. And I was like, wow, that's actually a pretty cool education.
Well, it is interesting, too, because there was a lot of supporters on that side that probably didn't bargain for, you know, genocide and a world war.
Yeah.
So it's like, how do they feel? Do they feel bamboozled or whatever? Like, it's a neat area to explore, I think.
But yeah. So
that was really interesting.
Yeah. You know, and like, you have those kind of conversations all the time when you get talking to people in that mm-hmm. environment, which I thought was really cool. And like, taking a train trip like that, like, you see parts of the country that you probably just, you know, don't really see too often. I mean, like, me personally, I've driven from Los Angeles to Chicago once. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I experienced like what the Rocky Mountains look like and all that stuff like once, you know, and it was really cool. But like, a lot of people, that's a super long drive. So a lot of people haven't done that.
Yeah.
So, it's kind of amusing when you're in like the observation car and stuff like that. It seems like progress like stops when you're going over like the Rocky Mountains.
Yeah.
And anything cool is outside.
The scenery was just unreal.
Yeah. Cause going from Chicago to San Francisco, you, experience basically like every major, I would say, like, you put it in Minecraft terms, like every major biome that North America has to offer. Cause you start in Chicago and you have kind of like urban sprawl, and then you go through like just a ton of farmland, and then you're kind of like the foot of mountains and some deep forests. And then you're actually going over the mountains and, you kind of go through like rocky areas and snowy areas and super foresty areas. And you come back down and then you go through a desert and, you know, then eventually you're back into like plains again through California and stuff. So it was just like, I don't know, really, really neat to see like just how vast the United States is, I guess.
Yeah.
So
it's real pretty.
Pretty cool. Yeah. I don't know what they can possibly do to grow this event any more than it already is, because the train is as long as it can be, like without all sorts of like crazy hoops to jump through for. And like, I don't know how much longer it can even be to go that same route, because I was reading on like some of those weird train forums that people were posting on Twitter. Cause like, so that was the other kind of thing. Like, so the train length and its formation was very non-standard for Amtrak. So there's like all these like train spotter people that were like flipping out over it, you know, and like posting like YouTube videos of the train going by. Cause I think it had like one extra sleeper and one extra observation car compared to the normal layout or something like that. I don't remember. It was not normal. So people were like, oh my God, I gotta go out and see this train. Like, which
I think that's cool though. Like, I would have never known that that world of enthusiasts exists. And then to see something that's like, so rare, is cool.
Yeah. So that was kind of neat. So, it's an interesting situation that Adriel has herself in with Train Jam, because like the event sells out instantly. Like, so they're able to charter an entire Amtrak train that sells out in a matter of hours.
Yeah.
For all the tickets and stuff like that. And it seems like one of those things, like, she added like one more coach car or whatever, and it supported that many more people. Like, I feel like those tickets would all sell just as fast.
Yeah,
like,
I think so.
And the problem is like, the more, it's like one of those things where it's like, you want to tell everyone how awesome Train Jam is, but at the same time, like, it's only making it more difficult for yourself to go the following year.
Yeah.
Because of increased interest. So,
I think it'd be cool if they did, a couple different lines or something, maybe a Train Jam 2, because, out of that Chicago hub, they go like to all sorts of directions and stuff.
Yeah.
I guess you'd ultimately want to end up in San Francisco still, but
I was thinking, I wonder what would work. Yeah. I mean, cause you need like a pretty decent length of train track to make the Train Jam make sense. You know, like, you can do like a short ride. So, I almost wonder, although I guess the timing doesn't really work out. You could do like a Train Jam from Chicago to Boston for PAX East. But I guess PAX
That's not East, that long of a train though, right?
Well, it's almost, yeah. I mean, it's at least a day or two, I would think. Chicago to New Orleans too is, like, I'm just trying to think, like, what would be the longest routes from...
Yeah.
Because that's, like, the central Amtrak hub.
That maybe to Austin or something for, you know, one of those things. But
Chicago to Boston would be pretty good. But the problem is PAX East is, like, 2 weeks after GDC. So, like, who's going to do that? So, So yeah, I don't know.
Just make a month out of it.
I'd say the only problem with Train Jam, and this is like, you know, a problem with huge air quotes around it, is that like it really extends the length of your GDC trip.
Yes.
Like I feel like GDC for us is always pretty exhausting, but like when you add in effectively like another Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, like another 5 days of being away to take the train, like it's a lot. Like I was, this GDC, I was like very much done by like Thursday.
Oh God, my brain was scrambled.
Like maybe even before then. So
yeah.
So we got into Emeryville. The part of Train Jam is they charter a bunch of buses to bring you into San Francisco. But I was like, dude, let's just walk a couple blocks away and get a lift. So we're not even in this like huge mass of, you know, people trying to slam on these few buses and stuff. So
yeah.
That worked out fine. Then we got to our hotel, which turned out to be just like a complete and total shithole.
Yeah.
On a level that's really still sort of incredible to me thinking about it after the fact. So
yeah, that was, me too.
That was cool, particularly with how much we pay. Like that's, so it's kind of the weird thing with San Francisco right now is that like the city's getting so expensive that it's more or less like pricing indies out of attending GDC.
Yeah.
And it's kind of an interesting problem too, because like usually like all cities have their bad areas, right? Mm-hmm. You know, Chicago certainly has its bad areas, and you know, I'm sure Sacramento probably does too, and
oh, yeah,
you know, all sorts of stuff like that. But the catch is, at least in Chicago, is that like the bad areas of Chicago is like the far south side and like kind of curving around the lake towards like Indiana and stuff. Like that's kind of like the super shitty areas of Chicago. But what's convenient about, well, I mean, as convenient as it can be to have like super crime ridden areas in the city nearby, is that like if you were flying into Chicago to attend like a conference or something like that, or, you know, do anything, like you really, there would be no reason for you to go there unless like you just really wanted to go to like Chinatown or something like that, at which point like you're only like really dipping your toe into the south side where it starts to get a little dicey.
Yeah.
Whereas in San Francisco, Moscone and is like right next to the Tenderloin, which is like the worst part of the city, and the Tenderloin is like the only place that anyone that isn't on some like super cushy corporate you know trip can really afford to stay.
Yeah.
So it's like people come into San Francisco for these events and like experience like legitimately like the worst the city has to offer, right?
Yeah.
And I feel like it's only getting worse year over year. Like this year, like when we first started going to GDC and you know trying to save money, like we stayed at a hotel that was like $150 a night or so.
Yeah.
Which for a crappy hotel is a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
And then like that hotel, like, you know, quote unquote, like renovated, which effectively meant they put new paint on the walls. And then they started charging like $250 to $280 a night.
Uh-huh.
So I was like, all right, well let's stay somewhere else, 'cause this is ridiculous. So we got this place this year that was $220 a night, which was absolutely terrible. And like the crazy thing about it is that like I bet Sacramento is the same as Chicago. It's like, so like even worse, like in Milwaukee, I've stayed at the Intercontinental in downtown Milwaukee for like $180 a night.
Yeah.
For like a legit, like real deal, like 5-star hotel is actually nicer than the Intercontinental in San Francisco.
Well, if you look through like the hotel deals and stuff for the week of GDC, it was just like depressing because our hotel was whatever, $260 a night or something like that. And then if you'd booked it like the very next week, it was like $73.
Yeah.
So you're like, they're legit like triple or quadrupling their rates just because they know they can, because there's convention and people need a place to stay and every hotel books up.
Yeah.
So they can do that and it just sucks.
Yeah, that was the problem. Like when we got there and like the hotel was as scary as it was, I was like, dude, this is just not going to work. Like let's find anything else.
Yeah, bail on everything.
And like there just was nothing. I mean, like if we wanted to stay somewhere else, and you experienced this too because it was Pam's birthday and like you were looking for a nicer hotel to spend that with and there was like nothing.
Yeah,
it was rough. That you could even do. So it's like, I don't know. It's interesting because GDC is in the situation where like all these people are like effectively begging UBM to move the event somewhere else. Yeah. It's more affordable and, you know, safer and stuff like that. Because, you know, like it seems like every year you read about like more muggings at GDC and like more people having like weird issues with just like violence and other like crimes and stuff surrounding the area. And I don't know.
We definitely felt not safe multiple times during the week. I mean,
It's bad.
You know, especially, just walking, not even late at night. I mean,
yeah, like you're definitely just in that area, just constantly in situations where you're like, oh God, like let's cross the street. Like this dude coming.
Well, I think it was Monday that the guy asked me for change and I said, sorry, I don't have any. And he said, I'm going to kick you in the fucking face.
Yeah.
And I said, okay.
Yeah, that was wild.
Doesn't make me magically have money for you.
And that kind of stuff like happens all the time in San Francisco. It's like very violent.
Just brush it off if you live there, I guess.
Yeah, I don't know. And it's like what's weird is that like when you complain about this kind of on Twitter or whatever, there's like this whole like San Francisco Defense Force that comes out. Yeah. And they're like, oh, it's not that bad. You know, I don't know. You guys, you know, people from out of town are always complaining. And
I mean,
like, I don't know.
I get it. My sister used to live right in the heart of San Francisco. And so there's a lot of great qualities about it. It's a really cool city in a lot of ways, but it's also in a really just jacked up position right now. And it's not like anything's getting better. It just seems to be getting worse. So all those great qualities kind of get outweighed by the, you know, sidewalk pissing and people confronting you and threatening you with violence and all that sort of stuff.
Huge turds just laying on the sidewalk all over the place. God. And
yes, that is like that. True story. So I don't know. I feel like, I guess if you live there, you just sort of get desensitized to it. So it doesn't come across as that big a deal to you. But then when you're just there visiting for a week, you're like, what the hell? I'm not used to just getting accosted constantly. Yeah.
Well, I think it has more to do with like, if you live in San Francisco, like you don't live in that area. You live like on the outskirts and like maybe commute in or something like that. So like you live in like a nice neighborhood, you know, but like when you come into San Francisco to go to a conference that's at Moscone, like you don't stay in the nice neighborhood because like you don't want to commit to like a, you know, $20+ Lyft ride every single time you want to go to the convention center.
Yeah.
Or, you know, time on the BART, assuming you're staying somewhere that's even, you know, on the BART line. And the BART itself is scary too. So it's like, you're damned if you do, damned if you don't kind of thing. Well, so
a kind of cool contrast to all that is WWDC being in San Jose. And don't get me wrong, San Jose has some rough areas.
Yeah.
But I mean, in general, its little downtown area is pretty cool. And having WWDC there last year was really cool. Like everything is much cheaper and much less like crowded.
Yeah.
And it was just kind of like a more relaxed vibe.
Yeah.
And then you look at that and you're like, cool, I'm still like within a throwing distance of San Francisco. I mean, it's like an hour train ride or something like that. So why not just start shifting things to San Jose or whatever? It's like to be actually in the middle of San Francisco, the city proper, to throw a huge convention like that is just doesn't make any sense.
Well, so I was talking to the Bex Saltzman, Adam Saltzman's wife, a little bit about this in the Train Jam Discord. And I guess the problem that the primary problem of moving the event, and like, you know, they hear this feedback every year that they want people to move it, is that there are very few places that have as much classroom space as Moscone does. I mean, because that is a, between, you know, Moscone East West and like whatever you call the one across from the Metreon, I guess that's just Moscone. Yeah. I don't know. Mm-hmm. The amount of classroom space they have is like, I guess just like unparalleled compared to any other convention center anywhere.
Interesting.
Because they draw like 25,000 people and have like, I don't even remember how many different, you know, sessions going on at every time.
Yeah.
So it really is kind of like a square footage, not only a square footage issue, but also like how divided that square footage can be into individual things.
Yeah.
So it's a pretty complicated problem. Mm. And also like it really, I've heard this kind of, you know, rumored around why, you know, you're not seeing more action faster is that like they also very likely have like multi-years worth of agreements with them.
I'm sure.
You know, because like I would imagine that, you know, UBM doesn't want another competing like gaming expo coming into that kind of same space, right, to try to take over
DC. They chase everybody out that even tries to do little things around that area. I mean, it's
so it wouldn't surprise me if they like sign agreements not just for like year to year, but like, you know, 10 years long or something like that. So it's and you know, I don't know this as a fact, I just heard people, you know, say this as, you know, reasonable speculation, but it's possible that like even if the crew behind GDC were like, dude, like we got to get out of San Francisco, let's put the pedal to the metal on this, like they might not even be able to leave for 7 more years or whatever, just because of contractual obligations with Moscone and stuff. So I don't know, it's a super weird situation.
It sucks for us because it's our busiest week of the year, and like even just this year there was just us two there, we did something like 70 something hands-on videos of upcoming games, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's a ton of content for just 5 days. And it was good content. Lots of, like, I feel like this year was the biggest concentration of really good stuff.
Oh, yeah.
With very little stuff that was like, eh. Like, everything was pretty much like, yeah, this is cool.
Yeah.
And,
but I mean, that's a side effect of them pricing out indie developers, too, though. I mean, because, like, before when the show was more affordable and more approachable, we would see a lot of stuff that was like, oh, this is very obviously your first game. Like, it's nice to meet you kind of thing. True. Whereas now it's like, you can only afford to go to GDC if you're an established studio or you just have too much money, at which point, that's like, of course your games are going to be good. So that was what was kind of interesting about this year, was that, you know, people always ask us, like, oh, what's the best thing you've seen here so far?
That's, and I feel
like
this year,
like in previous years, it was kind of, I mean, it was still a tricky question to ask, but it was like, there would always be clear
like
standouts.
One or two standout things. Yeah.
Whereas this year it was very much like, dude, everything was good.
Yeah.
Like, you know, we saw like maybe a couple things that were just early, but still like really good concepts.
Yeah, I agree.
But everything else was great. I mean,
the bummer is that screws us for being like, well, screw it, let's not go to GDC.
Yeah,
like, we kind of have to now, because where else are we going to meet that concentration of developers all in town at the same time,
right,
all wanting to show their stuff? Even E3 or WWDC, none of them compare.
Yeah, I mean, PAX is kind of close, but still, like, the problem
with PAX,
you still
don't get that many people. I mean, it's still more of like a consumer show, you know?
Well, but PAX is, the quality is more all over the place because it's way more.
True.
Affordable show to go to, because I was thinking about that too, like after we went, and I was kind of like tallying up like the budget in my head of like what we spent to go to that event, and I was like, man, we could probably split this into like the same amount of money into going to like three different events, but like the amount of content we got and games we saw and stuff, like if we went to three different events, I don't know if it would equal out. Like, I think we would probably not see as much stuff or not as much good stuff.
Yeah, I think I don't know, next year we can crash on my sister's floor in Redwood City, take the train in every day, save a lot of money.
How far away is that?
It's about a 45-minute train ride.
Oh, my God.
45 minutes to an hour train ride, 30 minutes if you're lucky enough to get on one of the express trains.
God, that would just be, I mean, that from a huge pain in the ass, because,
compared to walking out of our hotel and walking 10 minutes to get to exactly where we need to be.
Yeah. So I don't know. Yeah, it's not a great situation. And it seems like everyone, except people that work for large studios, where it's just like, oh, yeah, just expensive, who cares, is in kind of a similar situation where we are right now. We're like, man, I wish there was something we could do, but, like, you can't really miss GDC, so I guess you just kind of suck it up and go and complain on Twitter after the fact and air your grievances, more or less. I don't know. So,
aside from all that, it was fun.
Yeah, aside from all that,
it was a good week. All the games we saw were awesome.
It's always
exhausting.
Cool. Like, it always kind of, like, I always think, like, how cool it would be to have, like, some kind of, like, I don't even know what you call it, like, GDC Extra or something like that, where it's like, all right, so GDC's over now. We're done talking about anything to do with business. Like, now we're just going to hang out with people. Because, like,
I do wish there was something like that.
It sucks because, like, so many of those people, like, that we run into, like, I genuinely consider, like, good friends of ours just from knowing them over the years and, like, you know, drinking beers and, like, going out to dinner or whatever. And it's, like, perfect example, like, Arash from Limbic, super close to me. We could talk all the time. And, like, I saw him for 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Maybe,
I saw him as passing. He was leaving our party.
So yeah. Like, oh, well, cool. Yeah, that was it. Like, he showed up at a party, said hi. I got busy with something else, and then, like, I am not even sure I saw him leave, so that was...
He had a cooler party to go to.
Yeah, well, that's a very Arash thing to do.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know, I guess, let's talk about some of the games that we saw there. So, I think that what's getting the most traction of what we saw of everything at GDC is the RuneScape stuff.
Yeah.
Just because I wonder, and I don't follow RuneScape very closely, so I don't know if this is true or not, but I wonder if this is like the first time that people have seen the mobile versions in action.
Maybe.
Because like those videos have gotten reposted quite a bit on a bunch of other sites and stuff. So I don't know if that's because it's the first time or people are just so excited about this that any kind of snippets they're excited for. But so RuneScape, if you've never heard of it, is a... originally was a browser-based MMORPG that launched in the mid-2000s, I want to say, early 2000s, I don't really remember.
You got me.
But it was like a hardcore kind of fantasy game, and like its kind of claim to fame And why it exploded in popularity so much was that it ran in a browser. So like if you were a kid at school or whatever, you just went to runescape.com, you could play.
Right.
And it was free to play, which at the time was a pretty forward thinking thing to do.
No kidding.
So like, cause like you, like seriously, like if you were just a kid at the computer lab at school, like you just go to runescape.com, you just play until someone kicks you off the computer with like, I need to buy this game or whatever else. So, over the years, RuneScape has evolved quite a bit and now is a full-blown 3D MMORPG. Mm-hmm. But what's truly fascinating about the whole thing was that a couple of years ago, the RuneScape community, it was like beehiving real hard to the developers about how they want the classic version to come back. So the developers like challenged them to be like, I don't remember what it was, some super high number, like 500,000. If you can get 500,000 active RuneScape players to sign this petition saying you want this, we'll do it. Yeah. So I guess they like blew past that goal. And so the development team rebooted RuneScape as it was in 2007, which is still like super rough graphics, like browser game kind of thing. And what was really fascinating to me about this that I didn't know, I knew that RuneScape existed. I kind of had an idea what it was.
Yeah.
And I knew that like they had done some like old school reboot thing that, you know, was just super hardcore and probably way beyond what I would ever be interested in playing, or not interested in playing, but rather having the time to play.
Mm-hmm.
But what I didn't realize in talking to developers is that this old version of the game is entirely driven by the players. So like, say for instance, one of the RuneScape developers proposes like a certain like feature or addition or change to the game of any kind.
Mm-hmm.
They effectively pitch that to the player base of RuneScape Classic or old school RuneScape or whatever they call it. And 75% of the people that are active in the game have to vote that they want this for it to get added.
Yeah.
Which like, it just seems really cool. Like that's like the purest form of kind of like old school gaming, right? Because like it makes me wonder how, so that was one of the announcements of BlizzCon this year, or was it last year? I don't remember, that they were bringing back, they announced they were bringing back World of Warcraft Classic.
Mm-hmm.
And like, it's super nebulous right now, like what that even means.
Yeah.
What systems are going to be brought over from the existing World of Warcraft or whatever else, like how are they going to add content? You know, like there's a million questions, right? And I really would be shocked if they took the similar stance of RuneScape has done.
Yeah.
Cause that's so cool. Cause that's like the common complaint of any MMORPG is like, oh, I love this. And the developers added this thing and they ruined the game. Right.
Yeah, or, you know, my friends have been playing this, but the game's 5 years old now. It's really hard to just jump in and start new.
Yeah. Well, I feel like that's definitely the case for old school RuneScape. Like, I was kind of, like, looking into how to get into it, and I, like, started reading some guides, and it was like, oh, shit. Like, this is going to be a thing if I get into this. So, no real release date yet on either the old school or the modern mobile client. Like, it sounds like they've got some pretty significant design challenges ahead of themselves, which is just understandable because they're effectively like, you know, bringing in mobile UIs to two games that have been around for 20 years or so, very much built to be played with a keyboard and mouse. So I guess we'll see. I don't know. I'm super stoked for it because, like, you know, I feel like RuneScape is one of those games that, like, I can't imagine myself ever sitting down on my PC and being like, all right, let me grind away on this for...
But on your iPad.
Yeah, on my iPad while I'm, you know, like, half paying attention to a movie or something like that. Like, that perfect. Right. So, like, that's exactly the kind of thing that I would be into. So, let's see. What else was I excited for?
Oh, go ahead.
Esports Saga.
Yeah.
So this was a game that we actually didn't get to demo or anything, but they just showed us the trailer.
Oh, right.
And this seems super rad. So it's basically like, you should just, you know, Google Esports Saga or type Esports Saga on YouTube or whatever to watch the trailer. But it's like a Kairosoft game, but you're managing a esports team that is totally not playing Counter-Strike Global Offensive. Definitely a different game that is not Counter-Strike.
Right, not that at all.
But it was just really neat because, like, you know, all the kind of like training stuff that goes into like game dev story and stuff is in there, and it's like, you know, you're training up your players and trading them around and stuff like that, and then it plays like the simulated version of Counter-Strike, and it actually reminded me more of like Grand Prix Story because you know you have like the management section, and then it's like, all right, let's see how this goes, kind of thing. And I thought the cadence of that was really awesome in Grand Prix Story, and have pretty high hopes for this. So we'll see. No release date on that or anything, but they're still working on it. So what was the standout for you out of all these games? I'm kind of looking through the list right now.
I was just going through based on what was popular YouTube wise.
Oh yeah.
Oceanhorn 2 we saw, and that seems to have gotten quite a few views.
Oh yeah. So what's that all about? It's actually playable, right?
Yeah, I played it a little bit. It's tricky to get the hang of, but
so this is the other thing that was kind of crazy about GDC. I was thinking about, because we were talking about like doing like a best of GDC thing. Yeah. But I was like, dude, I was so busy. Like, I didn't even see the games that you were looking at. I'm sure you have no idea what games I was looking at.
Yeah, pretty much. So I mean, like, I haven't had a chance to go back and look at everything you covered.
Yeah,
so.
Like, I actually haven't even watched the video of Oceanhorn 2 yet. So, I mean.
So, it pretty much very heavy Breath of the Wild vibes, much like the first one had very heavy, I don't know, Wind Waker vibes, I guess you could say. So, not such a bad thing, though. Definitely a huge upgrade in graphics from the first Oceanhorn. It's full 3D and kind of behind the back view, open worldy style sort of game now. And tons of weapons, like a really clever kind of weapon wheel sort of thing. I had trouble getting the hang of like the lock on and aiming when an enemy came after me, and I sort of just took a lot of damage not knowing what to do. But of course, I only spent like a minute with it and no tutorials or anything like that. I think once it finally is finished and comes out, it'll be a winner. It's going to be not much like this on mobile, I would say.
Yeah. Well, that was the case with the first Oceanhorn too, really, when you think about
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
So I think this is going to be pretty good. When you're talking to them, were they planning on releasing it mobile first or like multi-platform at the same time, or what was the plan?
I don't remember exactly, but I'm pretty sure it's just mobile game right now.
That almost seems like the problem at GDC this year in talking to developers about like launch strategies and stuff was I hate giving the advice is like, dude, just launch it on Steam first and pretend like the mobile version doesn't exist, even if it's right. done at the same time.
Yeah.
Because like that perception issue has turned into such a huge thing. So like if you go, like if you release on Steam first, everyone's like, oh, cool, PC game. I'm a hardcore gamer. I like this. And then if you release on console next, you know, then you release on PC and PS4 and Xbox One. And then people are like, oh, I heard this game was good and the hardcore Steam people like it, so let me check it out.
Right.
And then when you launch that same game on mobile, everyone's like, oh, sick, this game was so good on Steam, like I can't wait to check it out, or I can't wait to buy it again, or whatever.
It's so sad that that's the case, but it's totally true.
If you go the opposite direction, people are like, oh, what's this dumb baby game, get this crap off Steam, like I can't believe this, even though it's the exact same game.
Yeah,
like it doesn't matter. So it was kind of weird, like telling people that we're launching the game, like, dude, just release it on, like, stagger your launches so Steam comes first, console comes second, mobile comes last a few weeks later. Like, you'll make way more money and you can keep making games instead of being the guy writing, like, the Sad Sap Gamma Sutra postmortem where it's like, I had two copies sold on Steam and all this stuff. So I hope the new Oceanhorn does really well, because it, looking at this video, it does look really, really cool.
It looks pretty amazing.
So one thing I got turned on to this GDC that I didn't even really realize was a thing that existed was this Bendy and Nightmare Run game.
I had never heard of Bendy in my life. So, and then hearing the story of how popular it became was blowing my mind.
Yeah, so here's a Bendy explainer for people that don't have kids. And I bet anyone listening to this that like does have kids that are, you know, like preteen, teenager, are like, oh yeah, I know Bendy. Like, I guess Bendy and the Ink Machine came out on Steam, and it was like one of those kind of like horror games, sort of in the same vein as like Five Nights at Freddy's.
Yeah.
And it really seems like what these guys managed to do, and I don't know if this was intentional or not, but like they slid in right about the time where like Scott Cawthon was like, dude, I'm not making any more Five Nights at Freddy's games, all this stuff. While there was a super hungry audience for like that sort of like basically the game that you can make jump scare YouTube videos out of. Right. More or less, you know, like that's kind of what Bendy and the Ink Machine is, as far as I can ascertain. So this game just like absolutely exploded in popularity, and like has, like, talking to the dude, it was so weird. Like I can't think of too many situations in my life that I've been in where it was like this, where it was like they introduce themselves as like, God, I don't remember what the guy's name, like Sean, God, hang on, let me look this up before I like really make an ass of myself. Jared, do you remember what the guy's name is?
I do not. Just realized I was muted.
Let's see. I need to find this out because it's part of the story.
Well, get on it.
World's loudest
BendyCreator.com.
No, the guy's name is Mike Mood. So yeah. he shows up. Uh-huh. Like his PR person, I think, set up the meeting, right? Uh-huh. And so he sits down and is like giving me this like grand intro for like, and this is Mike Mood, and I'm like, cool.
Should I know who you are?
I'm Mike Mood. Is that first name and last name, or like one name, or like your gamer tag, or I was so taken aback, but because like I could tell by the introduction, it was like, you should know who this is. This is Mike Mood. Don't you know Mike Mood, you fucking idiot? Like, and I was like, I have no idea what any of this is or anything else. So I guess Bendy and the Ink Machine just is like ripping it up in Hot Topic right now as far as like merch sales. Like they have like all sorts of t-shirts and hats and like stuffed animals and printed wallets and lanyards and like you name it. They've got this character on it for sale at Hot Topic. I guess it's just like just doing insane. Like, so they're making a mobile game called Bendy and Nightmare Run, which is kind of like, I don't know, like an endless runner plus boss fight kind of thing, which I thought was actually a pretty cool mechanic. Like I gotta give the dude props for coming up with a game that was actually pretty cool when it seems like if the IP that this is based on is as hot as it is, it seems like they could have farted out like literally anything and it would have done well.
Right.
So it's kind of like it reminds me of like, you know, like the Crash Bandicoot levels where you're running from the boulder and like the camera is like you're running towards the camera. So it's like kind of difficult to see what's going on, but you have like full view of the boss behind you.
Yeah.
Like that's the setup for this game, which I don't know. I thought like it worked really well. And I like reminded me a lot of like those Crash Bandicoot levels. And I guess it's neat that it's like the world's biggest thing, second only to Fortnite or whatever.
Apparently,
and everything else. So
apparently we're out of the loop.
I guess if you want to do some research on the Bendy IP, you can be cool amongst the kids these days if that's something you're concerned about. So I don't know. Let's see, what's another game from this list?
The Butterscotch guys showed their new game.
Oh yeah, that was cool. So that's
Levelhead.
Yeah.
Kind of like Mario Maker for mobile in a way.
Yeah. So I think that's really cool. Like, so not only was it a super tight platformer game, but the level creation stuff was really well done. And it reminded me of a lot of what was that golf game that came out not too long ago from the Bike Baron guys?
Magic Golf? No.
No.
Is that it? The one with the bunny.
With the bunny. I don't remember the title of it, but it had like, that game has this like a super intuitive.
It is Magic Golf.
Magic Golf. Okay, so Magic Golf has this like super intuitive, super easy to use level creator thing.
Yeah.
Because like usually when developers are like, oh, we have a level creator thing, I'm just like, eh, that's cool. But I like usually they're just like complicated to use and like, I don't know. Too long to make a level that's cool, and like I feel like I can never really make stuff that's cool, so I don't really even bother with it.
Right.
But Magic Golf really nailed like oh hey, I can actually make like a really neat golf course in 30 seconds and share it out and have fun with it. Like this is really cool. And Levelhead seems to have mirrored that kind of thing very well. And they have like a bunch of like really cool systems built in to the game. So instead of just like bookmarking a level that you like, which is, you know, how a lot of these games work, like Geometry Dash and other kind of things like that, you can actually like follow a creator of levels. And then it works kind of like Twitter in that like part of the UI, it'll show you like, oh, you know, these people, here's the feed of levels that all the people you follow have recently created and stuff, which I think is really neat. Like I'm surprised that more games haven't done that.
Well, I think what's really smart about the Butterscotch guys is leading up to Crashland's release, even before it came out, they spent all this time and effort on building their own backend, you know, infrastructure. And then they created their own like login and, you know, game save cloud service sort of thing and friend list thing. And they built their own version of all of that. And, I remember at the time thinking like, dude, you guys, what are you doing? Just throw Game Center in there and call it a day. Like, why are you wasting all this time and whatever? And then they come out with Crashlands, which is like super cross platform and your saves, you know, transfer super seamlessly. And, all of this great benefits of having running that stuff on your own and being in control of the entire thing yourself. And now you come to something like this where they're going to be, you know, trading and hosting levels, created levels and stuff like that. And I just keep thinking back like, dude, they made the right move by doing that.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, no, those guys, like, I really wonder how much of that was intentional and like part of the grander vision of
Butterscotch. I don't know. I'd love to know that.
Because I think like that is all the, I think all the web services stuff is brainchild of Adam, like the,
yeah,
the one of the three brothers. I don't, I was going to say the third brother, but I don't even know what order they were born in. So
he was the one that joined the team later because he was getting his master's degree in, I don't know, astrophysics or some crazy
something
thing.
Something insane. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm really curious if it was, you know, like they were like, all right, here's the grand plan. We're going to build this Butterscotch ID thing. Everything's going to like, you know, roll into it. And it's going to turn into this really awesome thing. Or if it was like, Adam was like, I'm helping. I'm making all these complicated systems that you guys can do whatever you want with, kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then like, it just took them this long to be like, shit, like
let's use this.
Amazing.
I don't know.
Tying all this historical stuff together.
Right.
So I don't know. It's really, really cool. And
yeah.
I'm very excited for it to launch. I'm kind of, when we posted about it, or like when I was looking at it and, you know, writing the post and uploading the video and stuff, I was like, oh man, like I'm really not stoked for the reaction that this is going to have, because I'm expecting everyone to be like, oh, where the hell is Scuffle Buddies? And like, mm-hmm. you know, where's Crashlands 2? Like, why are you making this dumb platforming game and all this stuff? But like, reaction's been super positive, which unexpected,
I mean,
and very good. So, of course, this year at GDC, we got to run into all the usuals that show the same game and everything else every year, which includes Suzy Cube is looking really good as usual. They signed up with Noodle Cake, so that's coming very soon, I guess.
This was the third year in a row we saw Suzy, and it keeps looking better. And this year we finally have a release window of spring. So we're in spring now, not too much longer.
Randy O'Connor's Seldom Falls, also really cool, but we saw that last year and it was also really cool.
Yeah.
That looks way more polished up and hopefully is going to be released sometime soon.
Yeah.
I don't know. Randy's kind of notorious for just taking for fucking ever.
Well,
when it comes to releasing his stuff,
he's the type that's like, he's pretty calculated and like, okay, I have this much money saved so I can dick around with my own games for this amount of time. And then the second that's up, it's like, okay, I need to do contract work and make more money again.
Yeah. So I think the coolest thing that I personally saw on the Switch was this game called The Messenger, which it's kind of like, I don't know, I hate describing everything as like a Metroidvania, but it certainly
it is
like,
though.
It kind of is. Yeah. So it reminds me, like it looks a lot like Shovel Knight in that it's all like really, really well done, you know, 2D pixel art kind of thing. But the gimmick that this game has, like, so when they were walking me through the demo, they were like, oh, and you get to this point and then like the 8-bit graphics turn into 16-bit graphics. And I'm like, all right, like, you know, that's cool. But like, this is, you know, that's a gimmick that's been done many times before. And like, I don't know if that can really hold a game up anymore. Because like Evil Land is, seemed like squatting on that and has taken it to ridiculous lengths, right? But what's actually really neat about it is that like it's the way the game is structured is that like the 8-bit and 16-bit games are sort of independent from each other, and you can like warp back and forth between them and solve like in-game puzzles based on like a tear in the 8-bit world will get you into the 16-bit world, which takes place in the future. So like maybe this tree or whatever will be rotted out, which will create like another platform for you to jump onto and like stuff like that.
Yeah,
so it had
that's
like this
wild
weird like time traveling kind of element to it of sorts that I don't know. I just thought it was really clever and it totally blew me away. Cause like mentally, when you like walk me through this demo, I was like, oh man, you just lost me in such a big way when you like, we're like, oh, and it turns 16-bit. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
And then like they actually using that mechanic in like a supremely clever way. And probably I'm doing a terrible job explaining it. So just like go on Tetrake and search for the messenger or like GDC the messenger or something like that, and just like watch the video. Because it is super cool how it
I think it kind of, because Eva Land does a little bit of that, but I think the way they do it here is a lot cooler.
Yeah. Yeah.
It so feels like, more natural or whatever.
And I don't remember if you get, if you have the ability to kind of like create rips in between like the two or tears or whatever they call them between the two games, or if you have to like use ones that are existing. But like either way, like when you like fast forwarded to what, like what the late game looks like, where you're just like hopping back and forth between time periods of this game to complete it, I was like, damn, this is a day one perch for me, for sure.
Day one, baby.
So yeah, super excited for that.
You also saw the new Ravensword.
Oh yeah, I did see it. Well, so the new Ravensword is kind of like a proof of concept kind of thing that's working. So what's interesting is that Ravensword, what is it called? Ravensword
Legacy?
Legacy, something like that. Yeah. So it's going to be made by the developers who did Morphite. And what's interesting is that they're doing it in the Morphite kind of like low poly kind of art style.
Yeah.
Or stylized low polygon art style, which I thought looked really cool. But like the people, commenters seem pretty split on.
It's getting a mixed reaction. I think it looks rad too. I think it gives it style. There's a certain point where like going for the realistic look just stops paying off, because you either have to go fully all in with it, or you know, if you don't go far enough, it just looks like a janky PS1 game. And going like the stylish route, you avoid all that, and it's why games like Okami or the Wind Waker still look amazing, because you know their graphic style is sort of timeless. Whenas, you know, if you look at a game from 10 or 15 years ago that's trying to be realistic, it's like laughable now. So I like this decision. I think it looks really cool.
So I'm super stoked for that. You know, that seems really early, so we might not see it for quite some time, but but really, I mean, like honestly, like this could be a 5-hour long podcast, so it's just talking about like all the awesome things that we saw at GDC. Like there's so much good stuff. So if for any reason you've missed any of our GDC coverage, just go to the site and like on the sidebar, you can find the like where it says categories. Just scroll down to GDC 2018. There's 61 stories for you to go through, which I think are, I think I have like two party posts in there, so it's like a good 59 individual game videos. Or you can just look at our YouTube channel or whatever. But this year the quality was super high of everything across the board, so pretty exciting time to be a mobile. And like the other cool thing was like most of these games were not free to play.
Right.
That was the other kind of surprising thing.
That's true.
So yeah, we'll
see. I think 2016 was the only other year we had more stories, and I'm pretty sure Carter was helping us out that year.
Yeah.
So to have almost as many stories with just us two is pretty proud of ourselves there.
Yeah, pretty wild. So, all right, well, this podcast is getting kind of long, so why don't we park this bus and see what happens next week with my trip scheduling and all that other stuff. So,
okay.
I guess thanks a ton for listening. Hope you guys enjoyed the previous kind of episodes with Carter hosting. I thought you did a really good job, so hopefully you guys liked it. You know, as we mentioned at the start of the show, Touch Arcade is primarily supported by our community, and you can do that by two ways. You can either go to patreon.com/TouchArcade or toucharcade.com/Amazon. Or I guess you could subscribe to our Twitch channel if you're into that at twitch.tv/TouchArcade. But really, if you're listening to this podcast, we'd love to have you in our Discord at discord.gg/TouchArcade. We've got a really cool community there. Like, I really like hanging out with everyone, and the more the merrier. And you know, if you like the show, we really appreciate iTunes reviews. And if you want to email us about, you know, suggestions or things to talk about or other anything you want to get off your chest, it's podcast@toucharcade.com. Otherwise, we will catch you at some form in the future that is yet to be determined with the amount of travel I still have coming up in the future. So thank you very much for listening, and we'll catch you next time on another episode of the Touch Arcade Show.